Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Mike and Miana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Miana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the RHAP BNB for episode 4 of Survivor San Juan del Sur. Sounded like a vampire.
So what was that voice?
I thought I was trying to go for something a little like Mesoamerican in honor of, you know, us being back in Nicaragua with season 29. But I fully realized that it ended up sounding like a vampire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, much more Count Dracula.
Yeah, exactly. And we're talking about Count Drewcula today, the fall of Drew Christie, and a little bit more. This episode is really just about Drew Christie with maybe like some fringe stuff happening on the side. Of course, that other voice you hear as we are on this exile island together with no shelter, similarly to the actual exile island, is Liana Boris. Liana, how are you?
I'm great. I am San Juan del Sur. That this was a fun episode to watch.
That's a lot better than my Dracula voice.
I've been sitting on that for like a few days since watching the episode. I think he maybe made the original joke, and I was like, I'm doing that for my intro line. And he was like, you can't do that for your intro line. Like, that's so stupid. And I was like, sounds perfect for the BNB.
I bet your thought was like, don't worry, Mike's going to do something so much stupider that this is going to seem like a layup, in which case you were absolutely correct with your prediction.
Don't even worry about it. Mike's probably going to do a Dracula impression, and I'm going to sound like a normal person.
He does it like every fifth podcast or so. For some reason, he brings in a vampire to do the intro.
I don't know why. I just let him do it, you know?
Well, let's sort of flap our way into this episode, because it's just the two of us, just family.
Sorry, was flap our way because of bats?
I think so. Okay. I've been watching a lot of What We Do in the Shadows, so I guess vampires are at top of mind. But yeah, that was a little bit of like an A to B to C type of connection from vampires to flap our way. Flap our way, this is like the new kneecap response. This is not a phrase that people commonly use.
We should never be allowed to do a podcast by ourselves again.
I know, this is like, I don't know, it would say like, oh man, you know, the parents are gone. Time for the kids to wreak havoc. But like, we're technically the parents in this case.
Yeah, right. So I don't think that analogy quite works, but I don't know. Maybe the kids do want to party, or the parents want to party. See, I can't even. I'm confused.
Maybe it's like a party of five situation where like the parents are gone and the kids are like trying to figure out how to parent themselves.
Or maybe we're like the teenagers. So like the young kids are gone. And so now we're going to have a party.
Yeah. Or like maybe we're like the boxcar children and that we're sort of orphans. And we're just sort of making our way from podcast to podcast, going on various adventures.
That sounds appropriate. We'll go with that.
I think so. So let's get into this episode, because we took a big leap forward from season 1 to season 2 to season 4 to season 29. This is, of course, a modern day episode, relatively speaking. I mean, this did air, you know, nearly 6 years ago to the day. It's a weird time. I know this is, you know, pre-Liana and RHAP. This was just around the time that I was getting started on RHAP, so it was a bit of a throwback in many ways. But unlike the other episodes we talked about, Liana, I can only assume that you watched this episode in real time, right?
Yeah, I watched this episode in real time, but I wasn't tapped into any of the super fan community or really anything like that. The concept of you can go on the internet and find other people who are interested in the same things as you was so foreign to me. When I was watching this, I was like, no, the internet is how I Google, like, how to do stuff like that, or email people.
To be clear, this was the year 2014 for people that are trying to figure it out.
That is correct. Yes. So MySpace happened. And MySpace was a thing. And that was like the first time I was like, oh yeah, like I can talk to other people on the internet, but they were already my friends, except for Tom. But then of course we became best friends. And then like Facebook was the same thing. So you know what I mean? So anyway, long story short, the point I'm trying to make is that yes, I watched this live.
All right, direct connection, much like vampires to flapping, is MySpace to becoming part of the online Survivor community.
Yeah, well, the MySpace group of survivors was, you know, like not a thing, right, that I knew about. So I was definitely not privy to it. So, you know, all the making fun of Drew Christie, like I'm just so sad on all the memes I missed out on. You know, I get to partake now when we revisit it, but I do have a little bit of FOMO of like, oh man. And I could have been laughing so much when Drew says he wants to go balls up. Instead, I had to laugh by myself to no one but my cats.
Yeah, there was a surprising amount of balls talked about this episode and nothing from Jeff Probst, surprisingly enough. I think had he known, maybe he would have dug into it. But it seemed like Jeff Probst was delighting in his own way in this episode.
Oh, my gosh. I did watch... I think it's Eager Turtle, the YouTube video or channel that has a bunch of compilations of Survivor stuff. I watched Jeff Probst being sassy, which is an amazing compilation of Jeff Probst being hella sassy. And this whole interaction was in there. And so when I got to see it embedded within the actual episode that it was from, it was like playing the hits, baby. Like Jeff Probst just getting his... I was going to say jollies.
Is I was going to say like getting his rocks off by sassing the contestants.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the appropriate verbiage, but yes, he just seemed like the smile on his face when Drew comes back to say, OK, yeah, but like we found the flint, which is the flint was like right next.
Oh,
to the
I
fire,
loved
guys.
How it was because remember, so this was talked about in the previously on, but the initial trade for the flint happened in episode 2. So it happened a good like 5 or 6 days ago. And then just then, nearly a week later, they finally fly in the flint and it was right next to the fire pit the entire time.
It's right next to Natalie's foot. You know,
like it's a piece of metal in a like a very brown, sandy environment. Maybe they didn't have Keith moving around with a large stick, then it wouldn't have popped out to them.
Right. Poking around to trying to find it. So that was super fun. But I think, you know, the whole point is like, well, what was I doing when I watched this episode? And I remember liking San Juan del Sur. I remember finding the characters super funny and really enjoying it. But I wasn't at that time going back and reevaluating and thinking about the strategy or even evaluating the character moments. It was very much a casual at the time. And so it was neat to see this episode now going back and revisiting and thinking about it from the super fan perspective that I have now.
Yeah. So San Juan del Sur, I feel like it's now looked upon more fondly. And I think part of it is because of, you know, the returns and subsequent successes of people like Kelly Wentworth and Jeremy and even Keith, Natalie coming back and having a memorable one in Winners at War as well. I think that it's sort of like the grass is always greener type of stuff, especially with what we were about to get in Worlds Apart and other subsequent seasons that, you know, I think that it was looked upon at time as maybe not necessarily a boring season, but one that like did not have any root worthy contestants. I think, for example, Rob might have even said at one point that like the San Juan del Sur Final Five might be like the least strategic Final Five in Survivor history, which Gabon says hello, but fair point. But I think that looking at all this stuff, especially the post-merge, I feel is super interesting and super strong between like the Josh and Jeremy volleying points back and forth at each other, you know, Keith accidentally getting his son voted out, and then Natalie's turn with, you know, blindsiding Alec and then turning everyone against John Mish, and then the idol play to get out Baylor. Like, there is so much good stuff here. I will say that the pre-merge does not necessarily live up to that. But that being said, this is a highlight of the pre-merge. And this actually feels like a bit of a unicorn of an episode in Survivor history, because this type of episode is sort of like what I want to call, from a storytelling perspective, a one-off, where it's one episode that is just completely dedicated to one person's perspective and one person's adventure. You know, like, one example from Survivor's past is the merge episode from Survivor the Amazon, when you knew from the first minute that Roger Sexton was going to be going home. And so the entire episode was dedicated as to how they were going to do that. I guess you could sort of put in the same category the episode from Survivor Winners at War, where Tony got like 20 confessionals, where he found the idol and then won immunity and then got out Sophie. Like, there's very little episodes nowadays that are really about one character's rise and fall over the course of 42 minutes. So to see this is extremely unique, but it does end up losing arguably the character of the pre-merge in Drew Christie.
Yeah, the thing is that this episode is so fun, and so it makes me look on the pre-merge as being super favorable, even though I'm ignoring every episode before that. And of course, you have all the John Rocker stuff, which isn't super fun. But this episode was just so crazy enjoyable. And I'm looking right now at the confessional count to try to see how many confessionals Drew had in that. He had nine confessionals in the episode that was his boot. He had 301 and then 9. Like, you know something's up when someone is getting that many confessionals. But at the same time, it's almost like, if we're going to lose Drew, we want to get every little terrible quote out of him that we can, you know, squeeze that juice, like, get out every little drip and drop that you can, because Drew Christie is so fun to watch on TV in like a terrible way, but still really, really fun.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because there's a lot of stuff that feels oddly prescient in not only this season, but Survivor in general. Like, obviously now there's been the talk about Drew Christie being Nostradamus because he talked about how dangerous Kelly Wentworth was. And then two seasons later, you know, she blazes a trail there. Or even this episode when Drew talks about, like, his big fear about the women joining together, and he ends up almost manifesting it, but it ends up becoming a thing where, you know, this is the only season where it started with 10 men and 8 women. And then I believe like 6 guys or something are voted out in a row in the middle of the season, and 4 out of the final 5 are women. So it's almost like Drew Christie ended up tipping off these dominoes that set the events into motion, including his own boot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very chicken and the egg type situation, right? Like, especially because you have the men all talking about who they're going to vote off, and that results in some of the confusion that you see in the actual votes, the fact that it's a 5-2-1-1 vote.
Oh, it's so messy. I love it. And that's the interesting thing as well, right? Is you sometimes get this when a tribe has not gone to tribal council in a while or ever. And then once they do, those cracks finally emerge. And I guess what happens is that we do benefit from the fact that, like, this nonsensical Keith stuff happens to happen at that same time as well, that, like, you know, he's pointing Jeremy, but maybe he did it by accident, but Jeremy's going after Keith, but John's going after Julie, because they've gotten to know each other for so long. Like, once they're given the leverage to be able to scheme and plot against one another in the open, then all bets are off, and it ends up becoming a really crazy vote for a first tribal council for a tribe.
Yeah. So I had to go look. So I was like, I need to see who voted for who. Like, you have Natalie, Missy, Julie, and Kelly. So all the women are voting together to vote out Drew, and Jeremy also joins them. And then you have Keith and Reed, who vote for Julie. John votes for Keith. Drew votes for Kelly. Like, it's just a hot mess. And I feel like so much of that dissent and confusion came because Drew was being such a stick in the mud, and an effing stick in the mud.
Not Keith's long stick.
Yeah, because he's just like, no, this is what we're doing. And so I feel like because he was so rigid, no one else was able, like, the other men weren't able to come to a consensus. And so the women were able to get together to put the votes on Drew. And then Jeremy, being the smart player he is, wanted to vote in the majority, you know? So, yeah, like, again, it's a chicken or the egg type situation. Drew really manifested this women's alliance because the women are like, we're not going to let you steamroll over us. We're going to take advantage of the men being all over the place. Whereas if he he'd been more amenable and been like, no, you know, maybe the women aren't a problem, who knows what would have happened in that case. So yeah, very enjoyable, very interesting.
Yeah, there's a great moment in the post immunity challenge stuff where, you know, John has a circle of people and he's like, okay, I think we should vote Julie off. Here's my reasoning. And Drew interrupts this. There's no reason to vote Julie off. And John literally goes, what? But to watch John Mish balk at Drew Christie is so, like, he's the perennial straight man. Like, Drew Christie's going to tell somebody later, like, you know, I don't know why I'm even telling you, because, like, there's a chance, I don't even think you guys will vote with this. And John's like, what are you talking about?
And also the moment where Drew is talking about voting at Kelly in front of Kelly, and you get that good pan back of just focusing on the guys, and then you pan out to see her right there. And you can, the way that the editors do it is it's clearly not an editing trick, because you see Drew Christie's mouth moving, saying we need to vote out Kelly, and Kelly is right there. Oh my goodness, I expected the Curb Your Enthusiasm music to just start playing, because it's just like, Drew, like, what is you doing? Stop.
Can I also say that I understand that, I think there was, like, people were tired of John Mish by the end of the season. I know that Steven was really, like, putting him forward as, like, oh, he's definitely winning. And I think, you know, a lot of people were very satisfied to see him go, especially with Natalie's brilliantly concocted 2-2-2 vote. I gotta say, though, I think in retrospect, like, I actually really like him as a character. Like, he is a goofy jock who admittedly is, like, not terribly good at the game. So it's fun to, like, see him in these moments, like, you know, when he sends Jacqueline to exile, for example. I don't know. I find John Mish personally very endearing in retrospect.
He kind of walks this fine line between being the sort of cocky alpha dude that you just want to hate, and then being endearing, like you're talking about. And so sometimes he falls in one category for me. Sometimes he falls in the other. I think in this moment, because Drew is being the more outlandish one, you're definitely just like, oh, you know, poor John, like having to deal with all of this. But once you kind of can take a step back and rewatch, I totally understand that perspective, because you get to, you kind of know the outcome that's going to happen. And so you can watch him play the game from that perspective, just thinking about, like, it's okay, he'll get his come up and in the end, you know.
Exactly. And there's, he's gonna have that douchey moment, right, where he's in the bed with Natalie and Jacqueline and, like, trying to be a wine connoisseur. So he definitely has those moments, yeah. Especially when, you know, after Jeremy and Josh take each other out, like, he becomes the next big power player. And I do remember there were a few episodes when people were, like, waiting for it to happen. Natalie was waiting for it to happen. He nearly went home at that West vote. If Natalie doesn't tell him to play his idol, he does go home. So I think people were a bit, like, disappointed to see his delayed comeuppance. But that being said, I do wonder, obviously, we're not going to watch through, you know, 13 episodes of Survivor San Juan del Sur, but I wonder if he is a character much like the season that holds up better in retrospect than, you know, almost more than 5 years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's entirely possible. It's been, because I did rewatch San Juan del Sur, I want to say a couple years ago. And every once in a while, just because I really like the season, I'll go back and watch random episodes, including this one, because it's so fun. I do think, though, my favorite San Juan del Sur moment, I know this isn't in this episode, but it's the chicken nuggets.
I mean, that's might be, like, one of the funniest challenges, right? Because there's that moment. I think there's Natalie trying to spit and ends up spitting all over herself.
Yes. And, like, Jeff Probst's reactions to the cast is just like, what have I gotten myself into with these weirdos?
And I that's why I kind of love this season, too, is because, I mean, we saw the bartering in this episode. But this really was the season of that. Like, we talked about two episodes before was when Hunapu, you know, gives away the fishing gear to get another flint. I think two episodes from now is going to be when Hunapu is like, we need more rice. And Jeff's like, I'm going to come and take your entire camp and in exchange for it. And then later on in the post-merge, that's when Jeremy and Natalie are giving the rewards away. Coconut chop challenge gets officially retired because Jeff Probst yells at everyone for basically setting it up so Missy will win.
Right. He's like, well, if you guys have already decided, we're not even going to bother to do it. And he's so pissed. He's so pissed. Oh, it's amazing. This is the hot mess season. And I think Natalie even says it during this tribal. Like, Jeff, we're a hot mess. Like, yes. Very self-aware girlfriend, like, you are a hot mess and the whole season is a hot mess.
I've you know, used the term many times before, but I feel like if you want a representation of, like, a train wreck season of Survivor, it's either San Juan del Sur or Gabon. in my opinions, where it's like a bunch of power players get taken out mid game, a bunch of chaotic, crazy stuff happens, and you get a very unsuspecting winner.
You know, that makes sense, because I do have a soft spot in my heart for Gabon as well. So I think I know what I like. The other thing too, because like you mentioned, we went from, you know, season one, season two, season four to season 29. When I first pulled up the episode, I was like, oh, this is great quality. And then I was like, am I watching it? Like, I thought I had done something, and then I was like, oh no, this is many, many years later.
Yeah, Leon, considering Leon's history with internet practice, I think that would make sense. Like, you're like, did I hit a button or something? Is this, what's HD?
Is 720p? What does that mean exactly? Which was lovely. Like, oh, that's cool. It's cool to see how Survivor has evolved, even if it's from the production side and the visual aspect.
Yeah, and I thought there was also interesting to, like, not exactly get, like, camp life stuff like we might have in those other three episodes that we watch, but still, like, we get the Alec and Baylor stuff, right? Like, there's still other character moments that are happening that's not completely embroiled in strategy. I think it does help that it's a cast of new players as well, who, especially this season, are really trying to figure out the game as they go along. So there's a lot more based in, like, interpersonal relationships and you know, what they do around camp and how that informs it, rather than like, all right, well, especially because of this, the Coyopa tribe, right? They don't go to tribal council, but like, Dale was the only one left out of the John Rocker vote. It's pretty certain that he's going to go next. So there weren't many stories that they needed to tell from that orange tribe.
Right. I was thinking about it also from the sense of, like, this episode didn't feel jam packed. It didn't feel rushed, but I felt full after. Mm-hmm. And of course, when we're cherry picking episodes like this, it's like, oh, but this is the best episode of the whole, you know, season or whatever. So, like, of course, you're going to love it. But I feel like the pacing was great here, because, like you said, we get the brother son, or a brother son. No, that's not a relationship.
Would that be
happens.
Like uncle nephew then? Brother son?
Brother son. He's my brother son. That's how we're related.
Is that like my mother, my sister from, what is that, Chinatown, I think?
Yeah. No, but the little bro, big sister, right? Like the Alec and Baylor thing. And at the same time, we still sort of got a little bit of strategy, even if it is a mess of strategy, versus when we watched from seasons 1, 2, and 4, it was so character heavy, which is great when you have so many great characters. And if Survivor can always produce that, I think it's fun that way. But this felt like the Goldilocks and the Three Bears. This is the right porridge that I wanted to eat. I had a lot of fun with this episode.
Yeah, because, and I think it also helps that, again, you have someone like Keith, who, like, is still doing strategic things in spite of itself, but it's, like, baked within character moments, right? The fact that he goes looking for an idol, doesn't find it, immediately then, whether intentional or not, fingers Jeremy, being like, I think Jeremy has an idol, and then subsequently goes back to looking and finds the idol.
The whole conversation at tribal council where Jeremy is trying to explain how alliances work to Keith, and the whole concept of a sub-alliance.
Yeah, that's new to me.
It's new to me. Like, I don't even understand how that works. Like, if you are working with him, right? Like, you would go to him. Like, what are you doing, Keith? But it's so entertaining. And I mean, it's obvious why Keith was brought back. Like, he's just so fun to watch on TV.
Yeah, and especially, like, again, considering, like, how this idol is going to go. This is going to be the idol that he plays with the infamous stick to the plan vote that ends up voting out his own son from it as well. So, like, Keith just brings so much. It's also fun looking at, like, you know, the first episode, Val is sent to exile and Keith is sent to occupy her and, like, accompany her. And then as a result, Jeremy feels like he can trust him so much. And then imagine being from Jeremy's perspective. Keith, who's supposed to be one of your closest allies, you hear is suddenly just saying, yeah, Jeremy has the idol. And you get thrown under the bus by one of your closest allies for no particular reason whatsoever. And I love this version of Jeremy. I do subscribe to the theory that I do feel like maybe Jeremy's subsequent other appearances have been a little, like, the edges were dulled down by the fact that, especially in Cambodia, that he was a winning person, that, like, we wouldn't see that many negative sides to him. Because, man, I really love some grumpy Jeremy Collins. He's just so fun when he's exasperated.
He's so entertaining. He just pops off the screen. He's great in confessionals. He's great even just watching him play the game. Like, it makes me happy. It, like, gives me warmth inside. And he's a player who I think just... like is willing to share with the audience.
Yes.
You know, because there's some players that want to like keep stuff inside or don't feel like they want to do that. And I feel like I understand Jeremy. I know Jeremy, and that helps me relate to him from a character perspective. Like, I'm the viewer. I get Jeremy. And I think that that's something that's super valuable. And we see a lot of that here in this episode.
Yeah, I think that Jeremy is not somebody to mince words specifically to the camera. So like, he'll call Drew a moron. Like, he'll call Keith idiotic, and that's, it's fun because, again, it's like a little blunt. There's no sort of like there's no sort of, I don't know, filter taken through to the words. And that's really fun to watch as a confessionalist, especially to like essentially have us be the wall that Jeremy vents to about these very kooky people he has to live with.
Yes. And to go back to the Keith thing, I can completely empathize with Jeremy's exasperation, because when you are dealing with, when you're playing with somebody or against somebody, or even like in everyday life, you're dealing with somebody and you see them make a decision. If you can be like, oh yeah, that decision was rational, I disagree with the decision, but like, at least it logically made sense. This whole Keith Jeremy interaction, Jeremy's just like, What do you like? This is, I can't even understand why you would do what you do. Like, you can't understand why Keith would do what he does, why he behaves that way, and that it makes you extra exasperated. And we get to see all of that frustration. It's like, I get you, Jeremy.
Well, let's get into some of our games from this episode. And of course, this is an episode based around Drew Christie, so you know we got to have a quiz about him. Liana, you are about to partake in a quiz I like to call "What Would Drew Do?" I am going to ask several questions, multiple choice, about what Drew Christie did over the course of this episode. And we're going to see how much closely you paid attention to the works of Mr. Andrew Christie.
Okay. If I do poorly, I'm also, though, proud of myself. Because
exactly. Like, it's a win-win situation. If you right. win, that means, hey, you're super observant. If you lose, it's like, okay, I didn't need to pay that much attention to Drew Christie, considering that Drew is such a quote-unquote ladies man that he would want you to be paying attention to him, despite the fact that you were taken.
Such a ladies man.
All right, let's start here, Liana. What does Drew wear around his neck throughout the episode? A cross, a feather, a shark tooth, or nothing?
Oh my gosh. I'm going to go with a shark tooth.
No, you would take Drew for one of those guys, especially, I guess, being from Florida yes. or something. But no, Drew wears a bright blue feather around his neck the entire episode. It's on a string around. Like, I don't know if it was taken from tree mail or something, but he decided to fashion a great necklace out of that and wears that throughout the episode.
Where did he get that?
I don't know. Well, John Mish has like a little bracelet that has one of the blue feathers on it as well. So I really do wonder if it was like either a piece of tree mail or like maybe a piece of the stuff that when they walked into the camp, that like the accoutrement that came with their surroundings. But yeah, he decides to turn it into a necklace as like a third grade art project. No, I'm not even gonna say third grade, as like a preschool art project.
Yeah, will you get that tattooed on you, Mike? The feather from Drew Christie?
Maybe if I had picked that idol, then I would have, then I should have, you know, if there was a chance to have just a feather on a string, I think only that would have been jankier than the idol that I had picked for Island of the Idols.
Yeah, just one step below what you picked.
All right, Liana, as I mentioned before, Drew balls ups. And at the reward challenge / hero arena or whatever you want to call it, he tries to single-handedly barter Jeff the new flint back for the fishing gear they gave away, which is not a piece of fishing gear that Drew tries to get from Jeff. A mask, snorkel, a spear, or flippers?
I don't think he said flippers.
That is correct. No flippers needed for Drew Christie. He's enough of a beast in the water that he doesn't need anything to help him.
Doesn't even need it. Yeah. And when John sends Drew, because Drew apparently like volunteers after Jacqueline loses the duel, I love John trying to be like, yeah, Drew's super helpful when he's not napping.
That's the other thing I love about John. It's like John is, you know, tight bros with Drew. They, I think Missy is the one who says at tribal council that they run around like a bunch of 5-year-olds. But like, as Drew is doing this barter, John has his head in his hands the entire time of like, this is, I tried to tell him, but this is a terrible decision. terrible decision.
Well, and like, he also knows that everybody else feels that way about him. So John's trying to walk that line between, I want to keep my buddy happy, but I also want to keep everybody else happy. And that was sort of his approach.
But did the Jeff Probst sass montage include John saying, like, I feel like you're taunting us, and Jeff going, I am taunting you. You get nothing.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
Before we move on to more fun and games, we're going to take a quick break to listen to a word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we are back, so let's keep on keeping on. All right, so speaking of John, so yeah, as mentioned, John beats Jacqueline in the Little Hero game and picks Drew to go to Exile Island with her. What does John tell Jacqueline before her and Drew go off together? A, he's a good guy. B, don't let him nap. C, keep an eye on him. D, take care of him if you can.
So this is what John says to Jacqueline?
Yeah.
Ooh, goodness. I'm trying to think if he made the joke. I'm going to go with A.
You are correct. Yes, he sincerely told Jacqueline he's a good guy, which segues perfectly into my next question. What activity are Drew and Jacqueline participating in on Exile Island when he sneaks a look at her ass? A, sunbathing. B, swimming. C, piling up firewood. D, tending to the fire.
Okay, shoot, because I remember I can see it because I loved the little editing, like, sound.
Drew can see it too.
Yeah, you can see all of it. Okay, she was definitely bending over, but I'm trying to remember if she was tending to the fire or picking up firewood. I think she was picking up firewood because I think I remember them being like in a foresty area.
That is correct. Yes, they were piling up firewood, and yeah, there's that nice little like doing sound.
Yes.
I mean, Drew essentially was the distracted boyfriend meme, but like he was also not the boyfriend at the same time.
Yeah, I don't know how you would change that around.
I guess the meme would be like Drew is the guy, Jacqueline is the woman in the foreground, and the woman in background is nothing because he doesn't have a girlfriend.
Yeah, or you have to just replace the whole meme, like. Take the boyfriend and I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, do some shuffling around of the people in the photo.
Yeah, we'll make a, or maybe we just make a brand new meme. We'll just Photoshop John in to that still of Drew looking down.
Oh, I like this. Okay, so we'll make this the new meme. It's the shot of Drew looking at Jacqueline's ass, and then like in the background is just John Mish's head, like the yes. Teletubby's son, the baby head in the background.
Mike, I have gone, I can't even tell you how long, without thinking about the Teletubby baby head, and now you have brought this back into my life. I can't decide if I want to, like, be mad at you, or I want to laugh, because that thing is terrifying.
Yeah, I mean, you can laugh just like the baby head son does to greet us every morning.
Yeah, just like the baby son. What a weird concept. Can you imagine being in the writer's room? Okay, I don't know if Teletubbies had a writer's room, because don't they
No, I'm pretty sure they just sort of rolled a bunch of dice of words on it to create that world.
Yeah, I would just love to be the creative group that came up with the sun baby. How do you do testing with children? You have a child. Do you like put things in front of him and you're like, do you like this or not?
Yeah.
Okay. And do you think
Asher just actually participated in a bit of a study for a toy company.
No
where
way.
We sat down with him and they like sent us videos to watch on an app, and they sort of watched us. We like did a video call with them. and they watch his reaction of like, did he lose interest? Like, did he engage with it? Did he just like stare transfixed at it? So that's sort of like, even at a young age, like around 1 year old, they're still doing this type of testing.
Career change, focus groups for babies. How yes. cool would that be?
I mean, your audience is either like has the most discerning taste or the least discerning taste, depending on, you know, where they're coming from.
Right. Oh, my gosh. That's so cool. Oh, my gosh. Good for him. You know, you got to put him to work early. You know, like life yeah. ain't free. All right. Well, you got to earn your keep.
Speaking of which, let's go to Alec Christie here, who, again, like this is an episode about the Christie brothers, because Alec gets a bit of a moment here on Coyopa. And Alec talks about how back in the day, his dad on like Saturday mornings would never wake up Drew to do a certain activity because, quote, he knew Drew wouldn't be worth a damn. What was that activity? Was it washing cars, mowing the lawn, fixing a car, or cleaning the house?
I have zero memory of this. I'm going to go with mowing the lawn.
I'm sorry. Mr. Christie would wake up Alec early to have him wash cars.
Ah, wash cars. Yeah, that
was
specific.
Confused as to whether it was like their parents' cars or like just go to the car wash and work at the car wash.
I think it's probably wash the cars at home, maybe. Because if he had a real job.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
what? It's interesting, though. I mean, that's an interesting introspection into their relationship. Because, again, you know, Alec and Drew were like, well, they'll barely interact in this season because Drew's about to get voted out here. But, like, it's very odd that Alec, you know, is the younger brother and Drew obviously thinks of himself very highly. But he also has, like, his own, like, well, you know, I was asked to do these things because our dad thought that Drew was this big loaf about. So, like, he has his own little, you know, high horse to be on.
Right. I was responsible enough that I got to be asked to do it. Maybe that's a good parenting technique to get one of your kids to do stuff is be like, yeah, you can handle it. And then they're like, yeah, I want to work.
I feel like that's a good thing for a younger sibling, right? Like, Liana, you and I both have siblings. I don't know if you've ever faced this type of situation, like with the Christie brothers, but I can imagine that's a good thing to give the younger sibling. If they feel like the older sibling gets everything, it's like, no, I trust you to do these specific tasks.
Ooh, like, yeah, like, oh, no, I can't, you know, I can't just trust just anybody with this, you know, yeah. Like, this has got to be yours. No, I don't remember any of that happening as a child. I did remember I wanted to do homework because I wanted to be like my big sister. So aww. I think, I know, right? So I think that was definitely a motivator to get me to do my homework was like, just like your sister, you get to do your homework. And then I'm like, yay. So, you know, I don't know. I also used to play homework where I would get the biggest books in our house, what? Which was the dictionary. And then I would just open it up and I would sit there like staring at the dictionary.
Ooh, what?
I don't think I like, I don't care. I think I could read at the time, but I don't really like,
so
remember.
So your game was, I'm all right, mommy, let's play homework.
Yes!
I'm going to get the Encyclopedia Britannica
yes!
and sit there and stare at it.
Yes, I would open it up and I would have a piece of paper and I would have a pencil. I don't remember if I would like write anything down.
Yeah, I was like, were you just writing, transcribing the dictionary?
Maybe. But I don't think I learned anything.
I mean, that's fine. When I was in fifth grade, I would spend afternoons watching educational anatomy videos for college students and taking notes for nobody in particular. So I think we're of the same mold here.
That's so weird.
Yeah,
it's
like
so
I wasn't
cute.
Doing it for anyone. Like I took my dad's like legal pads and I just like wrote reams and reams of notes about the endocrine system that I never ended up using at the end of the day at like 10 years old.
That's amazing. Were you interested in, did you like want to be a doctor? Were you interested in biology?
No, I think I'm just interested in anatomy.
I didn't want to
be a doctor at all. Yeah, I don't know. But then that was before I realized like my absolute disgust with body horror and my subsequent like inability to do anything when anybody is cut up in any way in the same room. So it was more like, I don't know, a labor of love, even though the love turned out to sour at the end of it once I realized what that actually involved.
What a complex road for you, Mike.
Yeah, look up, put it in the dictionary that you'll copy down. It's the definition of irony.
Ridiculous.
All right, well, let's go to the immunity challenge here, because of course, but this being the first, I remember actually being like very happy because I think this is one of the first big swimming challenges that we had experienced in the season. So Drew throws the idol to Jeff to catch it. And then Drew goes on to mutter something to the other tribe, Coyopa, as he walks back to the tribe. What does he say? Nothing but net. Boom goes the dynamite. Easy peasy lemon squeezy, or hot fire.
All of these are amazing. The first three I'm familiar with as phrases. Hot fire, I'm not so familiar with. So I'm going to go with hot fire.
Yeah, you went with the mystery one, and that is correct. He said hot fire, though I really wished he threw the idol to Jeff and went, easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
Yeah, that's amazing. No, Puya gets on me all the time for saying phrases that he calls white people phrases, and like, okie dokie is one of them.
That's my go-to. Yeah. You know that from texting with me. Okie dokie is like one of my favorite things to use.
Yeah, and that's easy peasy, lemon squeezy is like perfect for that. What were the other two? The first was Andy?
Nothing but net.
Yeah, nothing but
and
net.
Boom goes the dynamite.
Yes, yep. Line them up. That's perfect. I gotta start using those more often.
So as we know, Drew attempts to throw the immunity challenge single-handedly. In order to do so, what does Drew not do as he's tossing these rings? A, try to throw multiple rings at once. B, try to grab another ring as one is rolling away across the platform. C, throw the ring far away from the post. Or D, demand that it's his turn now.
Wait, which one did he not do?
Yeah, he did not. He did three of these. Okay. He did not do one of them.
So he definitely did C and D. What were A and B again?
Tries to throw multiple rings at once, or tries to grab another ring after one rolls away on the platform.
Okay, this is a technical question. I don't know if you can answer it, because I remember Jeff Probst yelling at him to be like, you can't throw multiple rings at once, but that's because the ring has to be back on the thing before mm-hmm. you throw another one. So yes. By throwing multiple rings, this is too much effort for a simple, stupid game.
Yeah, this is far from easy peasy lemon squeezy. So,
yeah. Boom goes the dynamite. Does it, by throwing multiple rings, you mean like one and then two, or like...
Like
at
somebody throws a ring
time.
And then Drew throws another ring, right after.
Okay, that happened. So whatever the other one was.
The try to grab another ring after one rolls away?
Yes.
No, what? He actually did not throw the ring far away from the post.
Okay, buddy. Let's define
I'm thinking
far
like
away.
He like throws a Hail Mary, into the ocean. It like sort of got near the post.
Okay. It landed on the little thing that it was floating on, but it definitely was no. Okay, fine. That's fine. You know what? Easy peasy lemon squeezy. Let it roll off my back just like a lemon. Yeah. We're all good.
I think my favorite was when he was like, "It's my shot now. My shot now."
Yeah.
This is why
turn.
He doesn't watch Cars.
Yeah, I get to go. Oh, he's such a mastermind.
Well, speaking of which, what does Drew not call himself over the course of the episode? A badass, a manipulator, a kingpin, or a puppet master?
Oh, okay. He's a badass and a manipulator of this game. So that's, he's basically a badass. So that is A and B. So the question is does he say he's a puppet master, or does he say the other thing that you
kingpin.
Said? A kingpin. Shoot. The quotes were my favorite part. I think he said that he was a kingpin. So I think my answer is the other one.
Yes, that is correct. He did not say he was a puppet master. Surprisingly, I feel like puppet master is said much more than kingpin. So I guess he was able to pull that one out of the lexicon when many have not in Survivor Pass.
I think my favorite Drew Christie quote was when he was talking about wanting to trade the Flint back. And he was like, I don't care. Like, I'm going to go balls up. That's what a good leader does. I was like, you're right, Drew. A good leader always goes balls up. Whatever that means.
And I love Drew insisting that he's the leader of the tribe is also one of my other favorite runners, despite the fact that he doesn't do anything. I think he says it's kind of hard to drag these people along and not get much in return. But the thing is, without me, these people would be nothing.
Yes. And the fact that he is here to strategize and manipulate minds.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's very like Chris from Baby Can 8, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. He's the mind manipulator. If only he could see it. Beautiful.
So obviously, Drew is going to dig into Kelly Wentworth as a target this episode, which is not a reason that Drew gives as to why he wants to target Kelly. A, she's low key. B, she's super friendly. C, she's observant. D, she's never missed an episode of Survivor.
Okay, she's never missed an episode of Survivor, so it's definitely not D. She's observant, she's low-key, and she's friendly. I think it's not friendly, so B is my answer? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you got the letter and the answer. That is correct. He did not say that she was super friendly, just that she was low-key, observant, and never missed an episode.
Yeah, I love that never missing an episode of Survivor counts. It's like a big threat. Because I wonder how many episodes Drew Christie had watched of Survivor before playing Survivor. Over under one.
I would say he watched like a season in either in Sequester or like knowing he was going to be on the show. The question is, like, which one did he watch? I would imagine it'd be like, I don't know, something like One World, where he's like, oh, this is going to be so easy. I'll just do what Kim Spradlin did.
Easy peasy lemon squeezy.
Oh, yeah, that's on the coat of arms of House Christie. Wash the car. Easy peasy lemon squeezy.
Basically a badass.
So Drew has this like boot order mapped out for if the woman should take power in the tribe. Where does Drew fall in the boot order, Liana? First, second, third, or fourth?
Oh, I have no idea. I'm going to go a second.
No, he feels like as much as he fears the Women's Alliance, he'd be third picked off. He says, like, first Keith would go, then John would go, then he would go, then Jeremy would go.
Okay. Yeah, I was like, he's either second or third. It was, we're Keith. Like, how big of a threat is Keith? And apparently Keith is a very big threat.
Well, because remember, it was that Jeremy was like, we need to get rid of Keith. And she was like, no, we can't get rid of Keith. Like, if the women want us to get rid of Keith, that means John's next. And then, of course, it's me. And then it's you, Jeremy. Like, he does not regard Reed whatsoever. He pulls a Nadia Anderson and I guess considers Reed one of the girls inappropriately.
Right. Yeah. Reed is there. Of course. Drew always with his finger on the pulse.
All right. So Drew tries to spread his plan to get rid of Kelly far and wide to Hunapu. Who does he not try to convince on Hunapu to get rid of Kelly? Keith, Missy, Natalie, or Reed?
Okay. I think it is... Okay, I remember him talking about, like, the women are going to send everybody home to Missy and Natalie, I think. I'm going to go with Keith.
Yeah, that is correct. You did it. You were correct in that the first time that Drew pitches getting rid of Kelly because of the women, Natalie is right there. And of course, she incredulously is like, why would you say that when I'm right there? Missy is the one who he tells the aforementioned comment of like, I don't even trust you guys to vote along with us.
Yes.
And Reed is part of that group as well.
Yeah. We don't even trust you to vote with us. Like, either vote with us or else. Like, what? I mean, I guess he's the kingpin, so that makes sense. Like, if you think about, okay, what does the world look like from Drew Christie's perspective? If Drew truly believes himself to be basically a badass and a manipulator of this game, then of course he would feel comfortable saying that type of thing to Missy, because he is the kingpin. The problem is that Drew's perspective is completely bonkers and way off, and so then he just looks like a crazy man.
Yeah, I mean, the kingpin doesn't care about what's happening to the seven pin, right? Because the seven pin is so far back that, like, I'm gonna get hit first, and yeah, if we end up getting a spare or a strike, it doesn't matter to me, but I know I'm getting hit by the ball at the end of the day.
Yes, the very apt and much needed bowling analogy, so thank you, Mike, for that.
Yeah, if I'm ever on Survivor, that's what I'm gonna bring in, like, screw pilots and passengers, hyenas and lions, let's go with the bowling pin comparisons.
Oh my god, I'm just imagining you going through and doing an alignment chart with each person, like, where in the pin, like, arena are they? Are they in the second row, the third row?
Yeah, exactly, that's the way you strategize. It's almost like a pyramids game, like, you get two people in your close circle, right? Those are the 2-3 pins, those are the ones that go down if you go down, and then they each recruit one other person to make it three.
Mike starts the first Survivor MLM strategy, that's what it's going to be called.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it would have to be called, like, the Pyramid Alliance or something.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, we already now know about sub-alliances. So thank you, Jeremy, for educating us. I think you can utilize that strategy pretty well.
So at Tribal Council, where the sub-alliances are brought up, Drew's just sort of, like, espouses some general platitudes as to what he hopes this vote will accomplish, which is not one of them. So three of these he said, one of these he did not. Does he want to strengthen the team, keep the tribe harmony, get bad energy out, or roll forward?
What was two?
Keep the tribe harmony.
Keep the tribe harmony?
Yes.
Yeah, that's not a phrase. So he definitely said that. Let's see. I'm gonna go with D, the rolling one.
No, much like a bowling board, he did want to roll forward. He did not want to keep the tribe harmony.
What? Oh no! I've been like inceptionized.
I thought for a second you're like, well, this is definitely not a phrase, so this must be Mike. So I'm gonna say keep the tribe harmony.
No, I was like, this is definitely not a phrase. It must be Drew.
Oh no, this is like the Turing test. I can't tell which is mine and which is Drew Christie's.
Yeah. Oh no, I think this is bad. This is a bad sign, Mike.
Oh no, easy peasy lemon squeezy. All right. Finally, as you mentioned, we get 5 votes for Drew in this episode. Who drew a picture of a fish next to their vote for Drew?
Oh, don't even have to read. Can I get a bonus point?
Absolutely.
Natalie.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, no, I saw that when I was watching the voting because I was trying to figure out, I was like, wait, who voted for who? Because it's obviously a 5-2-1-1 vote, classic 5-2-1-1 mm-hmm. vote. And I saw Natalie did that and I was like, that's so shady in the best way possible.
Yeah, because apparently Drew was like just like continually gloating about how good of a fisherman he would be if he had that fishing gear. So it makes sense to like not only be the final nail in his coffin, but also subsequently like make fun of him for it. And I'm assuming earn a fishy on the way out too.
Oh yes, I didn't even think about that. I thought it was just to make fun of him. Yes, the fishy I didn't even consider. But he was, yeah, Drew's basically saying, he's like, oh, I mean, I would have been, you know, pretty much the Rupert or yeah. the Boston Rob of my tribe if only I had had the fishing gear.
Or at least a mask or a snorkel or a spear. I don't even need the flippers. Well, Liana, congratulations. Much like the baby son, you have risen and shone in this game, trying to figure out what would Drew do.
Ugh, I'm so proud of myself for beating no one. But
you really kept the tribe harmony on that.
I did. I really did keep the tribe harmony. Okay, well, actually, speaking of games, okay. You described it as the little hero game. I'm going to call it the duel, which is its actual mm-hmm. name. Should the duel come back?
I was thinking about that as well. Of like, well, here's the thing. Like, I think the duel worked well in like a I've been trying to think either in a blood versus water context or like I wonder if the duel had come back during like Survivor 40. You know, I think it works best when people know each other. And I like the idea that they had people face off in these duels against their loved ones because there's a lot of like weird emotional investment in that. We saw Jeremy cry on day one when he beats Val in the challenge. And there's a lot of weirdness as to like, OK, do I beat my family member? You know, do you blame someone for getting beat by their family member? I like the stakes that were involved in this. I think at this point we were a little like islanded out between Redemption Island and Exile Island. But since we've been away from that for a good portion of time, it's an interesting concept that I wonder would be worth re-exploration.
Okay, second question. Should Survivor go full challenge, not the TV show The Challenge, not challenge like the duels, and do a rivals season?
It's an interesting idea. Now, the question would be, would the rivals be on the same tribe together, or would they be playing against one another?
I think they'd be playing. So I'm trying to think. I'm inspired by your comment, which is like, when the duels have the added drama of it being two people who either love each other or they know each other, like there's some type of drama there. I think it adds that added element, because otherwise it's just, you know, you're the two tribes versus one another, right? There's no added benefit, except now you're only watching one person do a challenge versus multiple. But if you could find other ways to incorporate that type of rivalry or relationship, loved ones is obviously one, any other just sort of pre-existing relationship, but like what if you heighten that with doing some sort of rival season?
So I guess the question would be, is there more drama in doing rivals or doing friends?
Yeah, friends.
If you had like Jeremy and Natalie on separate tribes and they had to face off against each other in a duel, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Everybody has a best friend who's on the other tribe. Doesn't necessarily have to be loved ones. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. I think, though, that they were fun.
I mean, I guess rivals would have the naturally competitive spirit. I agree. And there could also be the chance for more like trash talk afterwards of like, wow, Johnny Fairplay, I can't believe you got beaten by Sandra in that challenge. What's wrong with you?
Right. And I think, you know, there is something that when you are playing against your rival and it is a self-contained game, you feel like I can do whatever it takes to win. You know, like you're allowed to be super aggressive and like try your hardest and beat them because, oh, society has set up this little area for you to face off against one another. And so it could be super intense. The thing is like, well, then how do you cast that type of season? You know, what are the rivalries that we would want to see? So I don't know. Something to think about. Things to think about.
Yeah, I think, well, especially, you know, we have sort of, I think, expended some returning player seasons recently, but I do wonder if there's something like that in the future, like who would be some fun pairs to bring back, not just fun from like an entertainment perspective, but not like nasty rivalries. You know, like I don't know how much we want to see Corinne versus Sugar coming back.
Right. And that's the other thing, too, is that you don't ever want it to fall under that category, which with loved ones, it's never going to. I hope.
Yeah, hopefully not.
I hope. Yeah, as I said that, I was like, ooh.
That would be interesting, though, if it was sort of like, I mean, I know they're covering Big Brother 4 on the blockumentary, but like if they did something like that where they cast somebody and they're like, and here is your ex competing on the other tribe.
Oh my gosh, that would be so messy.
I mean, we just saw it with Winners of War, right?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I think that could be good. Maybe. I don't know.
Or like, hey, CEO, here's that employee you fired a couple weeks ago. Now they're playing against you.
Yeah. The CEO would be like, what are you talking about? I fire millions of people. Whatever. I don't know. I don't know what CEOs do all day. Count their money, perhaps. I'm not privy to that.
Here's the person who forgot to count your money that one time and you fired them.
Rivalry. Yeah, how would they even do the casting? I guess Big Brother did the casting, so I'm sure like we can figure it out now.
Yeah, though I think they sort of knew to like a certain extent. Like I'm sure, you know, there was some communication about it. I know that they had like secret pairs, but there's been very few times that they've had like there was that, and it was what, Big Brother 8 when they had like, and that's the other thing as well, is that the rivalries can really stem from like they did in Big Brother, a father and a daughter who haven't spoken for years to two girls in high school who one owed the other one $5.
Yeah, real drama. Very even playing field, I think, in terms of the rivalries there.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing as well, is I wonder, like, could they do like a social media rivalry, right? Like, could they bring back, like, I don't know, two former survivors who have like had beef on Twitter to play against each other?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It could be, so it could be a brand new player season, but with rivals, or it could be a returning player season, but with rivals. Or a mixture. I don't know. Like, figure it out. People smarter than me will figure this out. If it's just
like,
okay,
it's just like a blood versus water where like it's one half returning players and one half people they do not want to see play Survivor with them.
Oh my God. It's like Midwest Barb and Tyson are the two people.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a Survivor and then someone on social media who yelled at them.
Ooh, Survivor, meet your troll. You know, where it's like you have to play against your troll.
Yeah, if we're talking about healthy rivalries, that's definitely the place we want to dig into.
Pinnacle of health.
Yeah, these social media rivalries. You can't subtweet here, baby.
Yeah, that's what the motto is, right? Like, because you can't subtweet on Survivor.
Oh, what would Jeff Probst do with that? That would be hilarious. Okay. So, Mike, I want to give you the opportunity to play your own little hero game.
Ooh.
So I was in.
So I get to stomp on things and make a little seesaw happen with a ball? Because I will admit, that's something I want in my backyard.
That did look like a lot of fun. I'm not going to lie. Maybe it is because quarantine is really starting to take its toll on me. And just going outside is a gift. But that little seesaw game really did look like fun.
Yeah, and I know that when I talked with John Kierhofer back when I was on set, he said that like those types of games were their least favorite to design because they had to like pick something that was small, but something that gave an equal opportunity to everybody. And so it was really tough to boil that down. But I don't know, there was something about like stepping on the ball or stepping on the seesaw to fling the ball into the air that looked like, you know, you could like have a beer in one hand and do that in your backyard on a lazy Saturday night.
Yeah, it's very much the cornhole or horseshoes kind of version. Maybe that's what they should play, cornhole on Survivor. Okay, well, you're not stomping anything today, but maybe you can stomp this game by guessing the Survivor impressions. So I don't have a good name for this. I have Hidden Impression Idol, Survivor impression idol, impressive impressions. I really couldn't decide on anything.
Why was the idol in there?
Well, okay, it was like hidden impression idol is like hidden immunity idol, but it's also American idol.
Yeah, I was thinking it was like, okay, are we doing American idol with impressions?
I don't know, man. Fine. All right, so I was inspired by Natalie doing an impression of Keith. And so I have some clips for you, Mike, and I would like for you to play the first one, which really inspired this whole game.
I'll tell you one thing, Jeremy got that idol.
Classic.
That is incredible. I love that so much. It's like her genteel southern ways, especially considering that like Natalie has an accent herself. To have her like do an accent on top of an accent is actually extremely impressive.
Oh yeah, no, it was beautiful. It was a beautiful moment. And you know, I was trying to decide what I wanted to do for my game this week. As soon as she did that, I was like, oh, done deal. Like, I did want to do something with balls, but you know, you can only do the same joke so many times.
Yeah, only so many balls you can put up there.
Exactly. So what I did was I found some survivors doing impressions of other survivors.
Ooh. So can I guess Rob Cesternino for everyone?
Yeah, I mean, you're more than welcome to. You may not do so well, but you can. So the way that this can work is you can... I can tell you who is I can tell you who is giving the impression, or you can try to guess both who is giving the impression and who the impression is of, if that makes sense.
Okay, so basically I can guess both the impressee and the impressor.
Yes.
Or I can ask for the impressor.
Yes, but your goal ultimately is to guess who the impression is of, because impressor, whatever, you get it. It's fine. We'll play along. We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. Okay.
So, yeah. So number, you can play the clip for number one.
Bro, this boat is a real bummer, dude. Man.
Ooh. Bro, this boat is a real bummer, dude. Man. Well, it has the like the new tribal council music, so it makes me feel like it's a modern season.
Ooh.
I'm trying to figure out like who has a bro-y voice. All right, I'm gonna relent. Can you give me the impressor?
Okay, the impressor was Spencer.
Spencer. Oh, Spencer's doing woo.
Yes, Mike, that is correct. He's got a couple ones, but that was like the best one.
I love that. That's, and I'm assuming that was one of the many times that Wu like said he would vote with them and then refused. And so Spencer's pretty ticked off at Wu at this point.
Yep. Yeah. Not happy with Wu. And Spencer's like, he just always says, yeah, I'll think about it, bro. That was one of the other things. So, all right. Yes. That was Spencer doing an impression of Wu. All right. Impression number two.
We had to live with almost several times a day of, oh my God, they're gonna vote for me! They're gonna vote for me!
Interesting.
Okay, so would you like to know who is the impressor?
It sounds like an older guy, but I'm trying to like target the voice. All right, give me the impressor.
Okay, it was Philip Shepherd.
Philip Shepherd. Okay. So, Philip, is it Philip Shepherd doing an impression of Dawn?
That is correct.
Ah, see, I was thinking, I was like, okay, is it one of these like Redemption Island, like younger women? But then I realized that the reception towards Dawn from the Karamoan jury was not very favorable. So I could imagine that, you know, that's sort of him representing the general opinion on her.
Yep. And this was his question at that final tribal council. So
what a weird final tribal council between Sherry yelling at Eric to sit down, and then the question about like Cochran, who are you going to pick up at the bar with us?
Yeah, very odd. Talk about chaos.
And then also, I mean, even talk about take out your teeth, which might be one of like the undercover darkest moments in Survivor history. Oh, the exact opposite of the baby son.
Oh my gosh, exactly. The exact opposite of baby son. On a scale of asking to take out your teeth to baby son, how excited or happy are you right now?
Definitely closer to baby son, okay, personally.
All right, good. Well, let's see. Hopefully, clip number three will keep us in the baby son category.
No div. we're all out here doing the same damn thing with the same damn people. But you wonder who them people gonna be. Jeff, I think I'm on the chopping block tonight. I don't know where my name come up 5 or 6 times tonight, Jeff. It could be me gone.
This is Slam Dunk, Boom Goes the Dynamite, Rodney doing an impression of Mike Holloway.
Boom goes the dynamite indeed. Easy peasy.
Easy peasy lemon squeezy.
Yes. Yeah, that one was a classic. I was like, I knew, because off the top of my head, I was like, okay, I was trying to remember who all did impressions of who. And that was the first one that popped in my head. I was like, I have to do Rodney doing Mike. It just has to be there. All right. So you have 4 points. For what it's worth.
Okay.
I don't know what that means, but congratulations. You're doing a great job so far, Mike.
Thank you. I'm feeling good about it personally.
Okay, good. Very baby son of you. Well, let's move into clip number 4.
Oh, I don't care. Everybody get on the cloth. We go downtown. We get ourselves some bud. I do some karate. I just don't care.
That's right.
At all. About anything.
Oh, okay. Well, first off, I don't want to, you know, do an impression of that impression, but it's not a great impression, whoever's doing it, whoever they're doing it of.
The shade of it all.
I'm going to get the bud.
Bud. All right. Well, would you like to know the impressor?
Yeah, I'm going to have to on this one. Sounds like a younger man, but I can't pinpoint it.
That is a very broad category of people, but that is correct. Yes, it is Todd Herzog. And this is from China.
He's doing Denise.
Maybe not well, but yes, that is the impression that Todd was going for. Now,
I was thinking, like, is it supposed to be a Boston accent? But then it turned into like a weird Long Island accent. But I didn't know if that was purposeful or not.
I don't think so. I really don't think so. It's when Todd and Courtney are doing impressions of everybody.
And Courtney does Jamie with like the buck teeth and the half cocked eyebrow.
One eye. Yeah. Okay, that's the thing. Is that the other thing was like, oh, Courtney. Like, Courtney has to be on this list. I could pick 5 that are Courtney. The thing is that Courtney's are visual as well, and just they really like the bandy legged troll that is the Rupert impression.
Yeah, like the little the
arms
the
up and down,
the scarecrow arms.
Oh my god, it's brilliant. It's comedy genius. Unfortunately, this is an audio only podcast. I don't know how to do that. What is the onomatopoeia for the up and down arms?
Yeah, if you did like the soundtrack for it with the sound effects, you're like,
yeah, maybe I can make it work. All right, well, next time,
who's impressing a rusty bicycle?
Yeah, I'm sorry, are inanimate objects being impressed here? Like, is that what we're doing? Okay. Oof. All right. Let's do. Oh, yes. Okay. So this next one technically includes 3 people. Okay. You can answer this however you want. There's one that is the majority, which is what I'm going for. But you'll see. Roll the clip.
Only reason I come back, someone messed with the cattle bar in my spear.
I didn't touch your spear, Rupert. I never touch your
spear.
Come on.
How's my head, Jeff?
Okay, so this is from Shapira's fake tribal council.
Yeah.
So Big Tom is...
I totally. Oh no!
Oh man, that's. I think that. I want to say Sue was being Jenna Lewis, and Boston Rob is being Ethan.
Yeah, that's correct. Totally didn't even clock that Sue's like, I didn't touch your spear, Rupert, and I was like, oh, that's the answer. Crap.
Yeah.
I messed up the game.
You Rupert Bonham.
Yeah. The Boston Rob as Ethan was like really making me happy. And of course, our very own, you know, Rob C is there as Jeff Probst, which was also hilarious.
And it's so crazy to think again about, like, you know, Boston Rob doing that to Ethan, and then like him making fun of Ethan later on when the tribe is over and everything, and then cut to like Winners at War when he's like in Ethan's inner circle. It's crazy what time can do.
No, and that's what was so fun, because I had forgotten about that moment until I started going back and trying to pull these clips, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's so full circle. It was just a really great moment. It was so funny, and Boston Rob also talks about how he just wants to show that Ethan's not as much of a pretty boy as he thinks he is, and he's like talking about Edith. It was like, oh, that's so cool. Like, that's really, really just neat and like heartwarming. Even if
I mean,
it's
heartwarming
unjust.
That it eventually comes around, right? Yes. This idea of like that they all grew up and they're like, why were we making fun of each other? Let these people make fun of each other.
Right.
We're going to be friends.
Yeah, we're going to come together. We're going to try to play together, even if it's not super successful, but really, yeah, just enjoyable. All right. I don't even know. You get 5 points, whatever. I don't know. You did a great job. You did a great, doubled your score. Well done. Let's play clip number 6.
Well, old Boston Rob, that he's got himself a girlfriend. And that's all well and good if you're back home. But we're out here on Survivor. And I know I got the wife back home, and I came on Survivor to get away from having a wife.
Oh, the laugh. If it didn't give away before, the laugh at the end is Rob's sister, Nino, to a T.
I was like, I have to cut the laugh because it's so clear who it is, but the laugh makes me laugh. And I was like, I can't cut that. Rob laughing at his own joke in his own impression is just amazing.
I love it because I can also imagine the situation, right? Like, this is a person like sitting down with Rob in an interview format and like asking him to do impressions. And I can imagine that Rob has nothing to work against, like that they are just completely stone facing his impressions. And so like I can imagine a situation where he has to laugh at himself to like sort of ease the tension of the fact that they got completely no sold his Big Tom impression in the room.
Oh, I'm sure. And this is after the season had aired to, or at least had filmed, because he talks about like,
I'm going to say, I hope so. Otherwise he definitely predicted Rob and Amber happening before it even ended up happening.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And so like, I'm just trying to, you know, imagine what that was like, but he's got that whole video where he does a couple of impressions of different people from All Stars. And it's really fun. I couldn't not include Rob. Yeah. You know what I mean?
So that being said, I mean, my strategy to guess Rob Cesarino, you know, would have worked out 1 out of every 6 times so far.
Yes, exactly. For half of the points. So you would have gotten 1 out of 12. Okay. So clip 7, would just play it.
Okay.
An impression of a person.
An impression of a Russ Landau. And it's done, I'm assuming it's done by that Chapera tribe, right? Because I believe that they sang the theme song out at the end of their tribal council.
Yes, that is singing the theme to the hidden voices song. That's they're playing themselves out.
Let's see if I can listen to it one more time.
It's just an audio clip.
That's fine.
Just like
my computer futzed out on me for a second, so clearly he does not want me to listen to.
Okay, well, maybe this next clip will help to sort of fulfill that desire.
Yeah, let's hope this thing doesn't melt down on me in the process.
Oh
my god. That is the lovely Karishma Patel being forced to sing the Survivor theme song during Survivor Sequester Season 1.
I was like, this is the most inside baseball thing in the entire world, but I hope
it's not for a lot of people out there. I hope people seek out these clips, or at least, so to explain it a little bit, there was a round during Survivor Sequester that occurred last month when they were like, given punishments to do, and Karishma's was that when she wasn't strategizing, she had to sing the Survivor theme song.
I was like, which one did better? Was it Karishma or was it the Chapera tribe, like all singing together?
I think the Chapera tribe had more conviction, because Karishma's gradually, like, it got so quiet. Like, she'd be like, oh my god, we need to take care of this now. Like, you need to get them out. Oh, wait.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, so mellow, which is not what the Survivor theme song is. It's in your face. It's edgy.
Yeah, right. It's very intense, you know? Like, you gotta capture
that energy.
It's
the punk rock of theme songs.
For sure. All right, well, congratulations, Mike. You win the game, I suppose. I do have one more clip that I just really wanted to include. I'll set this up before we listen to it. So Rob Cesternino, our very own fearless leader, Rob Cesternino, did the Instagram takeover, I think, that must have been multiple seasons ago,
Yeah, it was. I think it was during Edge of Extinction.
Yes, it was during Edge of Extinction. And it did include a lot of impressions. And so there were a couple that I really felt the need to include. And so I did want to play this clip.
Dave, I've been waiting for you to get here. I'm giving you a piece of my mind. Oh my God, I'm so tired of hearing about this. Reem, this was so many 14, 15, 16, 17 days ago. But Dave, I've been waiting here for your... Dun, 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 dun. Rick Devins did it. Take that, Ron Clark. Peace, bro. I did it all by myself.
All right, well, I'll give him 2 out of 3. Because I don't know if that... It says like Rick Devins, I don't know, like is on Quaaludes or something.
I like that. Dun, dun, dun. And also,
hey, Rick Devins here.
That's worse, Mike.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. It's like he made it like really like high pitch and like, I don't know, his voice sounded so leery. Like, hey, everyone, it's me, Rick Devins.
I did it. Yeah, if you haven't seen it, the video is up, I think, on the RHAP YouTube page. Go check it out. The whole series is there. He's got the little puppets like on a stick or whatever. It's really fun, really funny. It's like 2 minutes, you know. So if you didn't get to see it when he did the Instagram takeover, definitely go check it out. Flashback to the Edge of Extinction time before we got the winner and the inevitable close to that season. We were still having a lot of fun.
Yeah, bygone days when a Rick Devins impression was the only thing we needed to worry about in our lives.
That's right. That's right.
Well, the one final thing that I wanted to talk about from this episode is I want to go back to the hero duel, and I want to talk about the reward, because I found this so interesting. So they usually, you know, they sometimes give these people a choice to choose between. But Liana, I don't think I've ever experienced this choice before or after in Survivor history. It was comfort items, you know, your tarp, your blanket, your pillows, etc., or campfire food.
Mm. Yeah,
that was so intriguing to me as a choice.
Yeah, the campfire. So the logic that was set up by Jeff was, well, one is comfort now, I guess, which is the food. And the other one is like long lasting comfort, which is the literal comfort items. I just thought that the food choice was so, like, wouldn't you do like rice and beans or like something that would last a little bit longer? Or like, it was like sausages.
Yeah, like something themed, right? Because like I would say, like, you could say like, oh, you can have an Italian feast, and like that has several foods accompanied into it. I've never heard anything be branded campfire food. Especially when the category is, what was it? It was like sausages, popcorn, and s'mores.
Classic campfire food. It should have been like the freeze-dried dinners, canned beans. What else? S'mores,
yeah,
I guess,
I don't
maybe
know,
counts.
Like jerky.
Jerky, yeah. Well, you know, we already talked about jerky earlier in the series. Campfire food. Have we seen the campfire food reward at all? Like, not even opposed. No campfire.
I mean, I think
food.
We've seen, like, maybe they've served, like, I think they've been separated, right? Like, they've served s'mores in the past. Or, like, I think they've probably had, like, sausages included in the barbecue. But I don't think they've ever configured sausages, popcorn, and s'mores together and say, let's call it campfire food and let's tempt the castaways with this.
Can you imagine the least satisfying snack of popcorn being the option out there? I can eat probably several buckets of popcorn and still be hungry because you're effectively eating air and butter.
Maybe that's why they didn't take it. It's like, well, it's going to be like, it's bad calories, right? It's just air.
It's just, we don't want to waste our time on that.
Unless it was popcorn with movie theater butter, because I know that after you go to the movies and you eat all that movie theater popcorn, like, you do not feel good afterwards.
Yeah, no, that is a delivery system for the butter. Like, the popcorn just happens to be there. It's really just, how do I get as much butter as possible that comes through a pump thing, like, into my body? I think that's right. Like, it's short of IV it straight into the bloodstream, like, the popcorn seems like the best alternative.
Who eats popcorn when they're camping?
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe this is a tradition, Mike, that just like we are not aware of.
I guess not. We're too busy reading dictionaries and taking notes on anatomy videos to go camping.
Yeah, we're like too. No, we're not the people to ask about this. You know, I will say, so in my defense, I did go, you know, I grew up in Colorado, so I did go camping a lot as a child.
All right, so talk to me about what's some campfire food from the Boris household.
S'mores, we would definitely bring. Okay. If we were doing, like, I don't want to call it car camping, but if we would, like, drive the car to a campsite and then, like, set up a tent from the car, so, like, had the car there, then it's a little bit more like s'mores, you know, like, kind of like fun foods. I think we did hot dogs. I don't know if we, like, were up to the level of sausages. Like, that's, like, next level. The food we absolutely never had was popcorn. Okay, maybe it could be like, you know, Boris household thing, but like never popcorn. Not even.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking stuff up and like, obviously you can do like the, you know, pop the popcorn kernels in a pot. Right. But like, that does not feel like the immediate thing you would do. When you go camping, like, great, good thing I have these corn kernels that I can pour into a pot and openly, you know, fire off this popcorn.
Is Jiffy Pop, you know, Jiffy Pop, you know, the thing, it's like flat. And then it pop. I feel like that's like a campfire thing. Okay, I Googled Jiffy Pop and the suggested like search terms are popcorn, campfire, and camping.
I also remember that at one point the internet nicknamed, I don't know if you know this, Liana, because you were still on MySpace, but they nicknamed Jeff Probst Jiffy Pop Probst. Could Jeff Probst be like a piece of campfire food in that regard?
I was 100% still on MySpace at that time and was not aware. Is there a reason for that nickname that you can't explain?
I mean, Jeff sort of sounds like Jiffy, and, you know, he has the P last name, Pop, so he just sort of gained the name Jiffy Pop Probst.
Yeah, Jiffy Pop Probst, I'm ready to bring back. Let me write that down. Jiffy.
I think so, too. I think when we have, like, you know, people sarcastically call him, like, Jeffrey or call him Probst or something. There was one Island of the Idols contestant that insisted on calling him Proby. Didn't end up working out. I think Jiffy Pop Prop Probst should make a return.
Jiffy Pop Probst. All right. We're writing it on a sticky note. We're going to stick it to my computer.
Oh, no.
And will I remember what this means?
That was a fun time capsule. So I know that recently, Liana, you had, like, sort of been cleaning out your desk and you stumbled upon several random notes that you've taken over the course of these podcasts.
Yeah.
And those were a fun sort of stroll down memory lane.
Yeah. What were, they ended up being anagrams for people's names.
Yeah. Something like that from when we did the Survivor 40 ones with Kirsten McGinnis.
Yes. I don't remember what they were now. I think I threw that away because I was like, why do I have this? Is this just random anagrams that I wrote down? Probably because I thought they were funny and I was like, yeah, I'm definitely going to remember to say these later. And then they just end up in a notebook that I have no memory of.
So now Jiffy Pop Probst has officially made the notebook.
That's right. Jiffy Pop Probst. At least that one. I was going to say I'm going to remember, but
obvious. You're not going to at all.
I was like, it's so obvious. It's self-explanatory. Like, I'll definitely remember what this is. Nah, probably not.
Nah. But you know what? For the moment, we all have this memory of Jiffy Pop Probst and the campfire food. I guess the other thing about campfire food is, like, I don't know. If I was a castaway, I would not want to, like, eat something that I would need to, like, also prepare. You know, like, I guess the barbecue is maybe a different thing, but, like, getting the appeal of, okay, these are s'mores, but first you have to make them and roast them over the fire. It's like, I've been doing enough tending to the fire, Jiffy Prop. Like, I don't want to do this. Please give me the comfort.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like, don't create more work for me. Like, that's fine. Okay, so, yeah.
It's like an Australian Survivor. Remember when they were given the reward of fish and chips and they were given, like, the satchel of potatoes and the fishing gear?
Yes. Right, exactly. So I did a little bit of Googling of my own textual messages, and I messaged you the 29th of May, and I said, do you know what also pony tots means? Which is, I'm sure, the message that everybody is looking for. Also, saltine speedies. You replied to me, are those euphemisms for drugs?
I think that might supersede easy peasy lemon squeezy as like a symbol of just how completely nerdy and uncool I am.
Okay, boomer. Are those euphemisms for drugs?
All right, you got any of those saltine speedies?
Gotta do.
Lying around?
We're gonna go out to the field, do a little saltine speedy. But also pony tots makes no sense. Like saltine
imagine if
I
Jeff was
eat.
I mean, listen, it's a weird point to Survivor gets to if Jiffy Pop is giving away drugs as rewards. Be like, we got everything. saltine speedies, also pony tots.
Is it because of, like, what would, is, like, pony is like a thing, right?
Yeah, pony is, I think, another name for cocaine.
Right.
They say ride the horse.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe then that's where, yeah, also pony tots. Uh-huh. Yes, yes, yes.
Oh my God. Yeah, I mean, it would be an interesting situation if they ended up giving, that'd be very interesting in very ways if they gave away drugs as a reward on Survivor.
Yeah, I think that would be a very, very different game, but it could be something we see. For those who are trying to figure out what also Pony Tots is, you know, I'll give you a few seconds to skip ahead, but it is Tyson Apostle, and Saltine Speedies is Denise Stapley. So if you want to solve those anagrams...
Wait, did you say skip ahead a few seconds as if people didn't want to be spoiled on the results of the anagram that we've already done on air several months ago?
Look, I don't know. I'm just trying to cater to everybody. If you really don't want to know...
Are you catering with campfire food?
Yeah, that's what. We have Jiffy Pop.
Also Pony
Tots. Also Pony Tots. We actually don't have s'mores, but we have the Oreo version of s'mores, which I'm sure exists somewhere.
S'moreos.
Ew. Why does that sound gross? What's a s'moreo?
It doesn't sound like a thing, but a euphemism for drugs.
Oh my God, yeah, I got hooked on s'moreos. It's rough, man.
Yes, s'moreos do exist. I see a Food Network recipe here where it's just that you, instead of like, you put marshmallows between the two Oreo cookies and you roast them.
You roast the marshmallow.
No, you roast the marshmallow and then you put it between two Oreo cookies.
Do you remove the cream?
No, cream's a part of it.
Ah, of course.
S'moreo is nothing without its cream.
Sorry. Yep, that's right.
Of course.
Very good, Liana, Mike.
Oh my goodness. Well, that went promptly. We thought that was a train wreck episode. We went promptly on the rails for like an hour and 20 minutes, and then we just went off at the end talking about giving away drugs as rewards and s'moreos cream.
As per usual. The what did we decide? We're like, what was the orphans? Were the orphans that are just...
Oh, the boxcar children.
Yes, we are the boxcar children.
Oh my goodness. Well, to finish things off, you know, there's been a lot of talk in recent weeks as to how, you know, people using their platforms to amplify marginalized voices and draw eyes to certain causes, both vocally and financially these days. So we're going to institute something new on the BNB this week. Moving forward, we're going to have what's known as a charity corner, where every week, either Liana, myself, or the guest that we're going to have on is going to choose a charity of their choice to highlight in order for people to donate or find out more information about. And, you know, for the first edition of this charity corner, I thought it was really appropriate if we highlighted the Marsha P. Johnson Institute. For those of you that don't know, Marsha P. Johnson was a revolutionary for not only Black rights, but gay rights as well. She was a tried and true liberation activist. She was a key figure in the Stonewall riots, which recently celebrated their 50th anniversary last year. And so I figured, you know, with this being Pride Month, as well as all the conversation and discourse around the Black experience and the trans experience as well, and Marsha P. Johnson as a Black trans woman herself serves as so much of an inspiration for so many people in our world today. If you want to check out more information, go to MarshaP.org/donate. You can also sign up as a member on that website. Black lives matter, trans lives matter, and Black trans lives matter. And I think what Marsha has done, you know, she again really was a trendsetter, but to see the disproportionate amount of violence against trans women and especially trans women of color is just an indicator of how important the work of the Marsha P. Johnson Institute is needed today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, quite the tonal shift, Mike, from also Pony Tots. But that's the whole point, right? Like, can be fun and yes, we can be silly, but we also can be minded of the other things that are going on in the world. And so, you know, we just wanted to take this opportunity to have some fun, but also, you know, remember, like, we're living in a time that is super chaotic and living in a time where if you can donate and you can help, that's something that we advocate for. I know I'm going to be donating each week with the charity mm-hmm. that we decide. side. And I think it's something that, you know, it's important. And if you can't donate, like, even just a reminder that, like, yes, sometimes we use these podcasts as a form of escapism, but I think there are things that are going on that, like, we just need to be reminded of. And so I think that this is important, and we're just saying, love each other, help each other. Let's all make this world a better place.
Exactly. Let's make sure that that son is perennially a laughing baby.
Exactly. On the scale of laughing baby to taking out your teeth, we always want to be on the laughing baby side.
So again, MarshaP.org/donate. And there you can find a lot of information about the work of Marsha P. Johnson, as well as the Institute. So yeah, I wanted to highlight that. And also, moving forward, if you all out there have any charities that you would like us to highlight, please send them our way. You can use hashtag RHAPBNB on social media. You can email us, RHAPBNB@gmail.com. Again, we want to draw people's eyes and ears to some of these causes that really need to be importantly supported in this day and age. And we're going to continue with our charity support and also talking Survivor next week as we move forward here through our journey in time. We took a big leap forward from season 4 to season 29. Now we're scaling it back a bit, but not completely. We are going next week to see episode 5 of Survivor China, the infamous swap episode where two people from each tribe are swapped over, and infamously the fall of Aaron Reisenberger as PG and Jamie, who was previously impressed by Courtney, end up throwing the challenge to get rid of him. And James is not happy.
Yeah, we're splitting the difference a little bit. So now that we've sort of done very early Survivor and then definitely more modern Survivor, now we're going to hit right in the middle. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, looking at it from a middle perspective, how Survivor has changed. I really can't wait.
And of course, we are going to be joined by a fantastic guest for all that. Ali Lasher, challenge podcaster extraordinaire, is going to make her return to the BNB. And Liana, it might also be a bit of a celebratory occasion in more than one way.
Well, yes, Mike, since you mentioned it. Okay, shout out to one of our listeners whose name is escaping me right now, and I super apologize, but I believe you tweeted at us 2 weeks ago when Mike and I were by ourselves, and we were like, is this episode 100? Turns out that was episode 97, and next week, baby, episode 100. Mike and I, for some reason, have been allowed to do this for 100 episodes, really questioning my life choices, but we are going to do something super spectacular, maybe, or not.
We're going to do something.
We're going to do something, maybe. In BNB fashion, we have no idea what we're doing, and we are going to continue that into the next 100 episodes.
Yeah, so if you guys have ideas of what we should do for 100th episode as well, I know that a lot of discourse has been around the Robin Akiva Nita podcast episode 100, that the 100th episode of the BNB snuck up on us. So as we hit triple digits, who the hell knows what's going to happen, much like with every episode of the BNB. So if you have ideas, send them our way as well. We are open to everything and anything at this point. Liana, if people want to keep in touch with you outside of all this stuff on social media, what are you up to, and what are you, I was going to say, what are you on? But the answer is, of course, also Pony Tots.
Yes, also Pony Tots, a little bit of Sticky Speedies or whatever that was.
Saltine Speedies. Sticky Speedies.
That's so much worse.
That's what happens when you have some S'moreos, you get some Sticky Speedies.
The cream is necessary. Ooh, Lord. All right. Yes. Jeff. Ooh, I am on social media at Liana RHAP. I am talking about RuPaul's Drag Race. We're talking about All Stars. So fun. And then, of course, you know, doing all of this insanity here. My partner, Puya Zanvakili, has been popping off on Jiffy popping off on his Twitch stream, and we played Mario Party against one another.
And I'm surprised you're still together. I hear very much so that, like, Monopoly and Mario Party are the two games that can really, like, break couples apart.
Yeah, one of the benefits is being on camera is you can't be as petty as you normally would because you're terrified about how other people will view you. So my normal pouting that happens where I separate myself and I get super angry couldn't happen because we had to sit next to each other on camera. So I will say, like that was definitely a benefit. It was a complete mess. Comes down to, well, I don't want to spoil anything if you go back and watch. But anyway, check it out. He's pushing out content, and I was happily being a guest over there, having a lot of fun and a lot of anger.
Do you think Can you convince him to do tiers of campfire food next?
Ooh, that's a good one. I don't think he's he's from Dubai. I don't know if he's ever been camping. But you know, maybe we'll bring in a guest. Obviously not one of us, since we apparently
don't bring in the indoors kids, please.
Yeah, no indoor kids. We need a couple outdoor kids that can help him with that. And he facilitates the discussion. I just really want to know where popcorn or Jiffy popcorn falls on that ranking list.
Yeah, and you can always follow me at A Mike Bloom Type. I'm doing the Lost podcast every week with Josh Wigler. But one of the variables that we started this week, a month ago, I told Rob Cesarino that if enough money was raised for direct relief via his GoFundMe fundraiser, I would get a Survivor tattoo as determined by a Brant Steele. The time of reckoning has finally come, Liana. This past week, we had a very fun podcast where myself, Rob, and Inkspert Jessica Lease got together and reviewed some submissions sent in by the listeners over the past couple months. And we then we basically figured out the cast. We have not run the Brant Steele yet. And so we basically figured out who is going to be competing to get tattooed onto my body. I really enjoy it. I know Liana listened as well and has her own rooting interest.
Oh my gosh. I got so excited. So as soon as it dropped, I was like, well, I have to watch the video. Like, I have to see what the tattoos look like. I have a rooting interest. I have several rooting interests, in fact. You know, obviously the soup for the B&B is, you know, my winner pick if I'm going to have to pick somebody. But I also, you know, Puya came up with the SoundCloud thing, or, you know, the QR code or whatever it's going to be, which I think is also great. Fleur-de-Lis is just classic. Like, I love Fleur-de-Lis. And then Sir Squiddington. I think I would be super, super duper happy if Sir Squiddington won. Also because the Sir Squiddington drawing that Jessica Lease made, oh my gosh.
It is so good.
If I was allowed to, I would put that on every single piece of clothing I own, all the walls, the curtain, shower curtains, like pillows, blankets, everything. It makes me so happy. So if Mike has that permanently on his body, oh my gosh, I would just be what a sun baby sunshine world we would be living in, people.
Oh my god, I just imagine now, like, walking into Liana's home that is festooned with Sir Squiddington images on the walls, on the ceilings, on the floor, in the bathroom, on the shower curtain, all over your clothes.
But you can't, it's either, here's the thing, you either get one thing with Sir Squiddington on it, or everything with Sir Squiddington.
Yeah, it's really
on
like
it.
There's no middle ground here.
There is no middle ground. All right. Look, I grew up in a household with an Elvis themed bathroom where we had lots of like Elvis. It, like, my mom's like, it looks like Graceland wallpaper. And that was it. That was all it took. And then we just started getting gifts from people. And they were like, well, here's a weird gift for those weird people that we unfortunately have to visit over the holidays. Like, just
the people with the weird Elvis bathroom for
exactly.
some reason.
So me having a Sir Squiddington themed bathroom is really not that far off.
So you can check all that out. The people that, or the things that Liana mentioned, were joined by, I think, like at least a dozen or more cast members as well. And we'll be running that Brant Steele soon to figure out what will indeed be inked on my body. Maybe it's Sir Squiddington's ink. Who's to say? As always, Top Chef has actually just aired its finale to what I think is the best season it's ever done. I got together with that panel earlier at the time of recording this to talk about it. Very, very fun podcast as well. And finally, not a plug for us, but almost a plug for you guys, as weird as it is to say. So for those of you that might not be in the know, or as a quick reminder, Rob Cesarino has put out an official application for new voices to RHAP. So if you are somebody who has always wanted to guest on the B&B or appear on the live feed updates for Big Brother or talk miscellaneously on an off-season Survivor podcast, RHAP is looking to gather some new voices, some new talent, to talk about their love for reality TV. If you want to apply, you can check out the link on Rob's Twitter profile at Rob Cesternino. I'm pretty sure there, I don't know if there's like a special link to it or anything, but basically it entails you to fill out a Google form, send in a quick 2-minute video about yourself and reality television, and then there'll be some subsequent interviews later on. But I highly encourage people to apply. Look, Liana and I have sort of, you know, both been so lucky to have the opportunities we've been afforded, but we have all been in the position of somebody who has listened to podcasts, maybe a lot Liana, because she didn't discover podcasts until like 2017 or something, apparently. But to be able to listen to podcasts and be like, that'd be fun to be a part of, but I have no experience. And you got to start somewhere. So I really do encourage anyone who has interest, please apply, to the point where if you are nervous about your application or if you want to ask questions or ask for advice, my messages are open on all social media platforms. So slide in there, ask me any questions that you may have. I'm more than happy to answer them for you. And I really look forward to hearing from hopefully some very exciting and new voices in the weeks to come.
Okay, so I'm laughing because I did discover podcasts in 2016. All right.
Oh my God, I did not realize how right on the money I was.
Yeah, very Nostradamus of you. I am super excited about this process. Mike and I are going to be potentially involved in some of the interviewing and things. And like, we're just looking for people who, you know, have a perspective, who want to talk, who want to give this a chance. And so I highly encourage everybody to apply. I can speak also from the Drag Race perspective that we are going to be looking for guests to come on and talk about Drag Race. So I know this maybe isn't the best place, but I'll plug it on the Drag Race podcast as well. So if that's a show that you're interested in, that's definitely a place where we're actively looking for new people. So check it out. Check out Rob's Twitter, whatever. We all retweeted it, so you can find it and reach out to us. Yeah, this is going to be super cool. I'm really looking forward to it.
All right, so that's going to do it for this week on the B&B. We're going to be back next week to swap it up with Allie Lasher talking about episode 5 of Survivor China. Special thanks to Scott St. Pierre for editing everything behind the scenes. Paul Osselson, our head writer. Wolf from America for that fantastic theme song. Donate, MarshaP.org/donate for the Marsha P. Johnson Institute. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll check you out at your next day.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R. You can stay for free.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.